Raymond Cox in Reel 4. This picture was just an imaginative reconstruction.
Yes.
Mm. And the sort of anatomical detail, presumably, was...
Yes, I wouldn't put four eyes when there's only two. I might put three breasts when there's only two, because that's fun. But the structure of the figures is true to life. There's only the distortion of emotion in that man's face. You see, he's like that. I've often felt like that myself when I've been drowning, quite often, because I'm not a very good swimmer.
And this portrait of a...
This is wife when she was...
Oh, this is your wife?
...doing this, yes. It's a quickie. That's in America, isn't it? Oh, it's slick, isn't it?
It's very nice. Yeah. And this is when your wife was in the ambulance service?
Yes. She was getting a 1/6 an hour after 33.
And this picture of bomb damage?
I think there must be two of these, because one of them was a photograph we got from the Montreal Star. It was being received by the mayor of Montreal. And this is bomb damage, yes. This is... Well, I saw all this sort of thing. I saw some marvellous pictures. I couldn't always draw them because, it was too exciting. I tried to do a watercolour of Chiswick on fire from there in the dark. I've got it somewhere. It's hopelessly unlike. I mean, it's a record, but it doesn't mean anything. And the swans watching all round in the distance. What's the name of that? Cherry blossom thing coming down on fire. It stopped opposite here. So the men next door and I, we'd shared buying a pump. We thought we'd stop that, we'd get that, and we had great fun because we put the fire out. I got on the deck through a thing off the Lamouette, got on deck. And he had to do the hard work, pumping it. Never done any day's work in his life, that man hadn't. I thoroughly enjoyed it, put it out. And then we tied it to our thing. And we went into our little dugout, which I'd dug up, where we kept a bottle of wine and some chocolate and that. And we spent the night thinking how much we'd claim, because it's tidal for this barge. Also, he told us a lot of things about himself, which I noted. He said he was not a Jew, he was Egyptian, but he was of a family of Hitler's type. He's a Prussian family, and so on. I thought, oh, this is a thing. I must note that in future, because he's in a job where he could know things. And any tap-tap next door, I shall know he's giving a message. However, we got up next morning, and it had gone. It had broken its bounds and gone downstream.
No, yes, you know about your compensation.
We heard no more about it. That was a night.
And do you know where this picture is now?
If that's Mumford. Mumford got one of these. Does it say Mumford? Yes, Collection W.B. Mumford. That's in America. Mm-hmm. And the others in Montreal. I may have one, a few variations of that somewhere around. And you wouldn't want those.
I might be interested.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And this portrait of a VC officer, I understand you did for his regiment.
This is... Was it the Royal Armoured? The Royal Armoured Corps. There were two pictures. I get them mixed up. One was...
He got his VC for being...
Yes.
A tank and rescuing a comrade.
Was the other one I did, wasn't Royal Armoured Corps, was it?
No.
With 200 soldiers and the Queen's mother big?
No.
Oh. No. Oh, this is the one, Royal Armoured Corps. I gave them a drawing out of that book of HMS Water Baby, which was a tank, the first tank used in the East. It couldn't get up the sand, and so it got stuck there, and for about a year or two,
The First World War.
The tanks, the Turks fired at it. When ultimately I got round to it, towards the end of the war, there was bits of grey sock and bits of bone in them. There was another nasty sight. And I've told since it's still there.
What was this man's name?
Can you remember the name of the sitter for that portrait?
You see. No. The man came here. He had the cheek to say, a big, hefty officer who came to see it. He said, well, I told him to go. And he thinks, therefore, he should have had the medal. They couldn't see the difference between him telling him to go and the man going and doing it. I ordered him to go.
And where during the war did you do any other, apart from the pictures you've seen, wartime pictures, and where did you show them?
I did one of scores of cross nightlights that was bought by Americans, done from Rofe, Sussex, from Rofe. It was a fantastic sight. Everything was going a terrific angle, bright. You could hardly imagine any aeroplane getting past him without being spotted. But all the time I was watching the sky and doing that, both here and in Kingston when I did a bit of fire watching in the school on the roof, and here and in Sussex. I never saw any of these lights hit anything to be seen. The whole thing seemed to be a fantasy, a great failure, like guns not hitting anything.
And where did you exhibit during the war? Or did you not?
Yes, I had one of my exhibitions was the very night at the Leicester Galleries. It was the very morning after the first time the guns went off in London. And nobody had a night's sleep, that's like. Everybody was so full of joy that last, it was a pure waste of time and money, but everybody thought, now we're getting something back on them. And we're all bleary-eyed. Not many people came, but that man and his father came. Where's that private view ticket? Oh, that man is
Peter Startup's father.
Peter Startup. He and his father came. I'm very pleased about Peter coming like that to it. That was a bad time for artists. And I show about when there was anything to show around. I don't think I sent to the Academy then.
No.
Too stuck up.
And did you feel the fees the War Artists Committee paid you? How did they compare with the sort of money you were getting?
Oh, I think they were very poor. They paid £46 for that portrait. I think I complained.
You complained about one of them.
The being depressed market, yes. Did they keep that? I thought it was a depressed market. And they didn't think so. I don't know who was responsible for pricing it. Probably Dickie, was it? I don't know.
And did you know many other artists who were working for the War Committee at the time?
No, I don't think so. Of course, Moore. I knew Moore. I didn't see a lot of Moore, but he did come the first part of his underground things. He came and stayed here. And sometimes we had to leave him because we were both doing jobs away from the night. So what he did with himself, enough to get his own supper. And I think then he found mutual friends in Swan Court, Swan House, Kensington, where there was service, and I think he found that more suitable.
And did you know Vivian Pitchforth well at this time?
Oh, I knew him very well. Oh, yes, of course, lovely chap. He's as deaf as a doorpost now. He might be very helpful to you if you haven't already seen him.
I'm hoping to go and see
him. You'll have to write to him, because he can't answer, but he'll give you... He tells some marvellous stories about his war. I won't tell you them because...
No, I'm going to hopefully get them for myself soon.
About how he didn't know the war was over and how in the Algerian side he went to knock at the door. And he'd got this deaf aid stuff, he put it down. The woman's two women did that.
And did you look at many of the war? Did you go to any of the war artists' exhibitions at the National Gallery? and see the sort of work that was being done?
No, I didn't. I went to that when Myra Hess or somebody was playing. I went, and I saw that picture of the Krauff, the big one, the one the wreck, not that one, the other one, the big one.
The shipwrecked one.
Yeah, they had that on the Academy at the National Gallery. It looked very well indeed there. And two landscapes also of Yorkshire, I think it was, that Henry Lamb bought. And that looked marvellous, really. I thought to myself, if only you can get a gallery like the London Gallery, the good lighting of pictures are worth the weight in platinum. As it is, you don't bother to look at them. There was one funny exhibition, typical of that. I sat with a number of Sussex amateur artists. They thought they'd like to have one at Croydon. And I watched a man who I think was a critic of paper, and he never stopped walking. Some of those pictures, I'd spent hours and days on them and taken a lot of trouble to frame. And I couldn't help thinking, oh dear, this is a dreadful thing. That man isn't going to stop. He's going gently along, like we did when we first went to the Louvre, and we did 5 miles of it, but we did it all.
And what effect do you think the pictures you did during the war have had on the work you've done since the war? Or the experience?
I think I noticed towards the end of the war... Oh, is it off?
No.
I noticed towards the end of the war that my colour was getting more like the difference between Mozart and Bach. It was getting more Bachish and less Mozart. The prettiness or the gentleness of colour was tending to get more monochromatic. And I didn't like that. And I couldn't help it. It's the country was getting miserable and tired and underfed. My wife had suffered from anemia because she wasn't getting enough of the right food. And we were all getting a bit down towards the end of the war when we were down Sussex. I used to sweat at the palms, and I didn't like that. I couldn't help it, but when there were all the shrouds coming off, I think it was noise as much that tend to make one to get your nervous upset. Nerves more than that. It was the noise, I think, that I didn't like much. The row. Oh, that's him. Pip Gardner.
Pip Gardner, BC.
Mm, I think it's that... not E there, it's G-A-R-D.
Anyway, identifies that one for us.
Yeah. Mm. They were all mad. It would be no more false than saying they're all absolutely sane. And they all love one another, which would have been a lie. Or they all hate one another, beloved. Some did. And I think there was an ups and downs. I couldn't help feeling that when anything important was due on, when the project was nearing the time of action, it was the most silent thing on earth. All the, what I call in the Yorkshire, the North, gustering had gone. There was no loudmouth, there was no Mother McCree songs or Annie Laurie or all that. That was all gone. It was silent. And when a man's dying... Sorry. I must go.
Did you have any difficulties getting material for oil painting during the war?
Oh, no, I usually have enough... keep me going. A difficulty now because of the expense. Ridiculous. I can remember going to Sickert's house, and when he was a very old man, and he and his wife were grinding their own because he had a theory that the commercial stuff was too finely ground, and the result, when you looked at what he was doing at that time, was ridiculous. excrement because the molecules were too big. He thought the molecules were too small there. But I've had no difficulty. One thing that I've found over 50 years of painting is pictures which I've done 50 years ago have not changed. And the reason why they've not changed, I found out, is because I use no oil, because I maintain, and I've done this for years, there's enough oil paint, enough oil in the paint, which is probably about 75% oil anyway, and to water it down with oil is the thing that's going to cause cracking and discoloring. I can prove that because I've got pictures that have been around. There's one down in the country hanging up. It's been around a lot. It's been in the window of the Leicester Galleries. It's been seen by and remembered by people. And it's just the same as it was. The other thing which students may like to know is if only they do is strictly according to instructions and use this emulsion paint, which was sold by a French, and demonstrated in Roger Fry's or Duncan Grant's studio how to make it with boil oil and a bit of sugar and that. This, if they only do as they're told, but they will never do it, they're too idle, is to mix equal parts of every colour. Then it's quite true that they go twice as much painting, you don't have to wait for a thing to dry. And it doesn't move. Now, I've got pictures that I did before the war that I've done with like that.
Mirage.
Mirage medium. If only it's used properly, it stays up. It's a bit thin because it's a reduction of the density of the pigment, but it doesn't change and it doesn't crack. It's a marvellous medium. I'm too idle to buy it, because the man's, I believe you can get it, somebody told me, but I haven't bothered, because I'm quite content now to use oil paint without either turpentine or oil. I feel strong enough, unless it's freezing night, then it's too thick. And so it doesn't do all these things that make you ashamed when you see. I saw a thing of Sickert's. Because he wasn't a good craftsman at all. He was a bright and lovely man, quite a genius in his way. But to do a portrait of a woman with a black bust with great big white cracks all over, well, I don't think it's good painting, and whether it's art or not, I just disagree that it's art. It's just bad workmanship. Mm-hmm. And then there's another point about it that I think about painting, is that there's no harm in being terribly skillful. I've seen men working when I was doing some lithographs for the army, and I did them myself on the plate because you got more money if you did it yourself. There was a man there who showed me a most marvellous piece of workmanship. They were all workmen and these people who cut these wood cuts and stuck them together and they were right for the papers. They were skillful, but there's no art in them. They look artistically impossible. And there's always been a movement, ever since I can remember nearly, when students thought, particularly Chelsea students, that it was inartistic to show skill. And all you've got to do is to show them a Rembrandt or somebody like that. And it's as skillful as any smart aleck. So there's no, it's a duty to be skillful. It's not a virtue. But of course a lot is sold. But we've said of the King George the fifth, when he went to the National Gallery, and they were given free access, aren't they, on Sundays or something. He said, I could put my umbrella through half these. What I like is nature and finish. It's the word finish. If your picture looks like a good bit of furniture, it's got a better chance of the people liking it.
Hmm. So your work shouldn't create any problems for conservation? As far as you know, that it
survived. Except on two occasions, and I'm sorry about this, but I sent two pictures that were bought for Manchester Art Gallery. They've got four or five of mine. And I rather hasty to, because the paint had begun to sink. And I thought, well, they'd like to see it up. because if they haven't got some other, well, they tend to get very dirty and they're difficult to clean. It isn't a cracking, but they get dirty. So I gave it some white of egg, albumen. And I thought afterwards this was a mistake because it will crystallise in time. So I wrote a letter to them, and got no reply, saying, for your creator's interest, I have given it a temporary coat of albumen. I didn't like to say white of egg. So I'm not in favour of that. Vanilla touche, used thinly, will keep it looking fairly clean for a good many years. I don't think I've varnished more than three or four. If I think parts are dull, have dried dull, because some pigments hold more oil and more liquid than others. Black is a terribly difficult colour because it easily cracks and it's got a marvellous capacity for collecting mould. Mm. And when any of my pictures show signs of that, I go to the chemist and I get some formalin and I rub some water and formalin and to kill the roots of it. Mm. And that succeeds. But it's a highly specialist business, is care of pigs. It's not the artist, it's the curator's job to do that.
Mm. Oh, no, but just if there was any special problems with yours you were aware of. Mm. And did you have any problems during the war with the censorship of your pictures?
No, only that one. There were problems, just as the man with the billhook. I was going to make a drawing of the church that had been bombed in St. James's Church. So I went up there and I got my sketchbook out, and one or two people noticed me as a part. But one man stopped and he looked and he considered. And by this time I knew what was going to happen. That man's going to fetch a policeman. And I knew I wouldn't be able to do it now because it's no use apologising or saying, well, I'm this. The policemen take no notice of you. They're frightened of committing it. So he's a spy or something out of them which is wrong. So I walked I walked out of sight round that little bit of street. Is it Air Street? Side street. And I stood there and he came, the policeman, he'd got him and he came round and he said, well, what's this all about? And so I looked up and I said, hole in the sky. I said, yes, people put hole in the sky. I murmured something about National Gallery and El Greco, other artists have a hole in the sky. Hole in the sky? And there was a bluish patch and it was a narrow street. Hole in the sky. Oh, hole in the sky. Mm-hmm. Hole in the sky. And he walked off.
You mentioned that one of your people who collected your work was an American whom you wrote to during the war.
Yes.
About life over here.
Yes. Yes, it was a great friend of mine, and he was a very earnest man. He'd been in the Navy, but not very... as a snotty, whatever they call them, and he wasn't very able to do that. He owned this boat, with the Lamouette, which we had, and he ran it over to us with his car, which ultimately we gave to the service, and it became a cop for coffins, and a funeral thing.
Yes.
A hearse, and that sort of thing. Well, it was only after the war was over a long time when I was told, I think it was by him, or his son or something, because I saw one or two of the letters afterwards. He said he mimeographed a million of them to the public, the description of the war going on. And as far as I remember, I saw what I saw, and there was just St. Peter's Square when he mentioned Pacific case. Things like, silly things like how all the women used to see who could get the most buckets of broken glass and shoved them all in the gutter. Always put and go like a snowdrift of broken glass along the street till somebody came and shoveled them all up. And I think there were lots of funny things like that. We did a fire watch business. And the vicar, who was a most marvellous saint of a man, he had a key, and when I was at home, he would let himself in at 1 o'clock and say, "Time, Raymond," and we'd parade his parade. Talk about all sorts of things, and some of the rude things, I said, because having all this religious knowledge to pass these exams, I knew a lot about the Bible. I didn't realize that he was very blind, and almost blind. He got these spectacles on. He was also cross-eyed. He didn't know whether he was looking at you or somebody else. We're going round the corner, and he put his arm on my shoulder. I said, "This man likes me." So when I got a bit farther along, I thought, well, I'll give him one now. And when anything dashed down, sometimes our flak used to drop and make sparks on the pavement. Mm. And we'd just look at it. See, sometimes in somebody's porch, we'd stand and watch it doing. We passed round two or three times. And I said, in this case, I said, "Did you know that Deuteronomy, if a man is contending with his adversary, and his wife seizes the adversary by the testicles, she's to have her hands cut off at the wrist?" He said, "No, I didn't know that." Oh, these are the little bits. We used to go then, ask for a cup, what we called it, a drum up. We used to go to, and there was a hole in a little dump in the square here where there was one woman who now is a tobacconist assistant, an old lady. She was in charge. It was thick with smoke for all the people who were working in the night, parading and doing. And we said, with a drum up, they looked blank, because nobody knew that a drum up meant a cup of tea, because that was First World War, and he'd been in Gallipoli, you see.
You think, in fact, the First World War overshadows your memories of the Second World War?
Oh, yes, very much so. Until I was about 75, I used to dream these dreams. It was always the First World War. Now it's gradually fading off. And I dream also of blood nonsense now. There's no fun in it at all, no real nightmare.